is.
What are you doing that stupid trickery crap for?
Is Felger and Mass.
The continued ish.
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
All right, back to calls here on an Agenda Free Friday, brought to you by Planet Fitness. The world judges, they don't. PlanetFitness.com. Everything's on the table here on Agenda Free Fridays, including a Hall of Fame question for Maz. Jeff in the car has it. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, hi, Tony. Do you still have a Hall of Fame vote?
I do.
Okay, so I have a question for you, and I've been wanting to ask you this for years. There are about 250 players roundabout in the Baseball Hall of Fame. If you had a player that was ranked 25th to 90th, in 16 different categories, including a home run champion, top 10 MVP four times, whatever, including eight gold gloves. Why isn't that player in the Hall of Fame?
Okay, and Jeff, who are you talking about?
Dwight Evans.
Okay, so look.
So, Jeff, I'm going to drop you, and Maz is going to give you his Dwight Evans.
Yeah, too. I would just tell you that I think he said four MVP awards. Like, you know, maybe I heard that wrong. Maybe meant in the top 10 four times or something. So, look, Evans was, to me, was your classic, very good player.
Has he ever gotten your vote?
No. Nope. And I you know, again, but I'm a small hall guy. Like, I like to keep it to the great of the greats.
What's the most he's ever gotten?
No idea. He's not, I mean,
has
he's
he ever gotten to 50%?
Oh, I don't think so. No, just because just about everyone who ever gets to 50 gets in. So, you know, he's not on the ballot anymore. He'd be a Veterans Committee guy. Evans would be. But, you know, to me, Evans is not a Hall of Famer.
Come on. And I don't care what the numbers. I just... Did you ever look at him and say, well, that's one of the greatest players in the game for a 10-year period?
See, the other thing is I hate when people say, well, he ranks in the top 25th to 90th in this. You know, and I'm thinking...
So what does that mean?
It means nothing. Because, again, it's all relative to the era you played in. How did you rate to your peers? That's what, to me, that's what determines it.
Michael in New Bedford on the Celts. Go ahead, Michael. What do you got? Michael! Okay, babe, you're on delay there. I'm in a good mood, so I'm going to put you on hold. I'm not going to hang up, but just you got to turn your radio down, your TV, or whatever you're doing there. Phelps in Brighton. Go ahead, Phelps.
Hey, guys. I can't believe how wrong you guys are on this Brandon Cooks trade. You guys are saying that he's not worth the first rounder. Would you agree that the most valuable contract year is the cheap last year of your rookie deal?
No, because then you're a free agent and you lose control. I mean, the team got bailed out by the Rams, thank God, but they traded for a guy with a year left of team control.
I'm saying the last cheap year. So you're looking at a guy put up 1,000 yards, only cost you $1 million on the cap, and then you turn around and flip that guy for...
Well, no. The flip they nailed. But so what? What does it matter how much Brandon Cooks made? You had tons of cap room. That wasn't the issue last year.
I don't see how it doesn't matter.
How does it matter? You were $10 million under the cap.
But what are they this year? You can carry that over. I mean,
correct, and you're still like 10 figure. You've got oodles and oodles of cap room. You don't need the cap room.
To me, it's a lot simpler. I just don't think he was that good. He's a good player. He's not a great player. You're going to give up a first round pick for that?
For cap room?
Yeah, I mean, I don't get
why.
Good riddance, you won't miss him, Brandon Cooks. How was he on third down? Again, I'll give you the number because I've had it saved in front of me.
So, Phelps, thank you for the call. He was good value for the money. I mean, I'll give you that. So good value in terms of that, in terms of what he made or what he took up of your cap. Sure, yeah, I think he gave you good production for that. He didn't give you good production for a first-round pick out the door.
When Brady went to him on third down of the regular season, 7 for 26, 157 yards, one touchdown, two picks, Brady's rating, 33.
Ugh.
33. He sucked when it mattered. Bye. Enjoy L.A. Bye, Brandon Cooks. Good riddance.
Now, the Brandon Cooks trade on the way out the door?
Steal.
Spectacular. Oh, what a great trade that was. What a great trade that was. The trade to get him? I'm sorry.
He can give up a first-round pick
please
for that guy.
1,000 yards, I'm 7 touchdowns. Oh, God.
Brian in Fitchburg on the Bees. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Mike. Would you say that basically ripping out the DNA of the Celtics this year made them a better team?
I don't think the DNA was the difference. I think the talent was.
Okay. So regarding the Bruins, I think... let's say splicing the DNA. Do you think that they could swing Marchand and Rask to St. Louis for Alex Pietrangelo and Jake Allen? I believe the contracts match up.
Okay, so I'm sorry, you said Rask and Marchand for Pietrangelo and Allen?
For Pietrangelo and Allen.
I mean, I would do it. Pietrangelo is an awesome D-man, and Allen's the goalie you're talking about.
Yeah, and I think Allen, I think Gallen's a good goalie. I think he just needs to get out of St. Louis and get a kind of like Bobrovsky, get a a new team, a new start. And I mean, I don't know what it would take to get Hanifin. I've been reading that on the Hockey News.
So Brian, you're saying that but your point is that they need a attitude adjustment by dealing Marchand.
If it brought back a 1AD, I'd let Marchand go, definitely.
Okay, I'd try and get the 1AD without dealing Marchand. But his first comment, does anyone feel that way, that the Bruins need a tweak in their, they need an attitude adjustment? Because he started with the Celtics, saying that they got a DNA infusion with the flipping of the roster, which I don't really, I feel they're still the same sort of scrappy, smart team they've always been. So I don't think it's a bad analogy, but is that what you think the Bruins need, a DNA, an attitude adjustment?
No. No, I like the Bruins' attitude this year for the most part. Now, look, they got smothered in the playoffs, but that to me wasn't about like a lack of heart or something like that. During the regular season, I think we saw the opposite. Now, look, it's regular season. Marchand's a terrific player on the ice. I mean, the hockey part of it. Isaiah Thomas was over.
Just don't think Marchand's a problem. I think you're lacking enough high-end D, and I think you're lacking in the forward group the combination of size and speed. You've got fast guys and you got big guys. You don't have both. And that second thing, I don't know if there's anything to do other than just wait for your kids to grow up and put on some weight and get on the program.
They got to get some of those guys stronger. They're not strong
enough. Some of their young kids are supposed to be bigger. Like this Trent Frederick kid is a big guy. Okay, big centerman at the University of Wisconsin. I don't know where he is now, like if he's coming. Like that guy has size. Seneshin, I think, is supposed to be a more physical kind of guy. If he's projected to come, you get some size. Like, I think they have it coming. Or you just put some weight on the kids you got here. I mean, I'm not going out and signing free agents or anything like that. I think I'm just waiting for my forwards to mature, I think.
They got to get rid of one of the small left-shot defensemen, too. Either Krug or Grzyk's got to go.
No question.
They're too small. You can't have both of them playing. They're too small.
Paul in Providence, what do you got for me, Paul?
How are you guys doing? I think it was early in the week, Felga, you were trying to, figure out where you put LeBron and, like, you're debating whether he's better than Larry or not and this, that. Well, I don't see how he's better than Larry when he shoots 50% from the free throw line in a playoff game and shoots 73% during the season. I don't see how that possibly puts him over Larry Bird.
Paul, I mean, I don't want to put LeBron ahead of Larry Bird because I think Larry Bird's better. I do, but so, I mean, you're right. I'm conflicted on this. Larry Bird was a better basketball player. He was a better shooter. He was a better
rebounder. He had more balls.
What was Larry a better rebounder?
He was a terrific defensive rebounder. LeBron blows him away in terms of both ends of the floor. LeBron, if you're taking the whole 90 feet, okay. LeBron covers it better than Bird does.
I mean, Caller's right to bring up how they are at the free throw line. What was Bird? 89%, 90%?
He was just a better shooter. He could shoot the basketball. And he was.
LeBron's a liability at the line.
And not just was he a better shooter, he was never afraid to take it. I never, did I ever say, whoa, Larry deferred there? Like, no, I was begging for him to defer. Sitting in the Mecca. Have him dump down my neck every time he came in. He freaking was an assassin. No, I want to say that Bird was better than LeBron. I feared Larry more than I fear LeBron. I do. But Larry never went to 7 straight finals, and Larry never took bad teams to the finals, and Larry never came back from 3-1 down in the finals to carry a team to a championship that wasn't as good. So I'm just trying to be fair. I'm trying to, LeBron James has done things that Bird didn't do. And so I'm trying to be fair to LeBron, I guess. But just in a vacuum, who was a better basketball player? I would still go Bird there. I mean, I'm sorry. And also just the mentality. Just the mentality. Like we've been talking about. Like I don't know what LeBron James is going to do in these two games. Is he going to shut it down? Is he going to try and prove to the people of Cleveland this team's not very good, so is he going to defer? I mean, I don't know. I don't know what he's going to do. The last game he took over, but I can't tell what he's going to do. I never went into a Larry Bird game and said, I wonder what I'm going to get tonight.
Look, if you can frame it however you want to favor one guy or the other. But at the end of the day, at his best, in his prime...
Who was a better passer?
Bird.
That 86 team? I've still never seen a team pass like that.
So I think Bird's peak was better than LeBron's. That's how I would put it. So Bird at his best, I would take over LeBron at his best. And LeBron blows him away in some areas there. But Bird, for a guy his size, shoot over people, defensive rebound. He was a good team defender. He could handle the ball for a guy his size. Like all of that, Bird.
Mike in New Bedford, did you turn your TV down?
Yes, sir.
Oh, hey, Mike. What do you got?
Hey, how you doing? Thank you guys for holding on. Love your show. First of all, LeBron's way better than Larry Bird. Case closed. Second of all, I'm going to tell you how and why Cleveland will beat Boston. Number one, what is Boston's away record in the playoffs?
1-4.
Thank you. That's number one. Number two, do you think that LeBron is going to have his players play the way that they did in games 1 and 2?
I don't know.
That's not going to happen.
You think so, but you don't know. That is a weak-ass group, man. That is a group there in Cleveland with not a lot of fortitude, including LeBron. So you don't know. You don't know what it's going to be.
I don't know. If you're a Cavs fan, how can you look at the second half of Game 2 and feel any level of confidence?
You can't.
I mean, maybe Cleveland does go back and win, too. That's entirely possible. Maybe they put it all together and it happens. But I don't know, before the game, how you could say, this is what you're going to get. You can't do that with that Cleveland team.
No, I told you. And the other thing is, from the Celtics' standpoint now, you don't have to win in Cleveland. Because I thought that Cleveland was going to be able to come in here just based on LeBron and win a game on the road. And now I don't know if they're going to be able to do that. After watching those first two, how could you feel that?
I mean, if Cleveland doesn't win at home, I mean we already think there's something wrong there. But because you know they're going to get the refs. You know, the law firm of Brothers and Foster is lurking somewhere, right? And the league's going to want them to win. I mean, like, all of it. Like, how do you not win those games at home? So, I mean, we'll see.
The Fixers. Brothers and Foster.
Back with more on
Agenda. We can help you with your problems.
Agenda Free Friday right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5. The Sports Hub.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5. The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub.
To the light tower again and off it. The second night in a row he has destroyed one in that direction.
Xander gets a fastball, room service fastball, and he knows exactly what to do with it.
His sixth home run.
Look at this thing. Right there. Three-run Johnson. That just breaks Gosman's back.
Almost busted the light tower.
Yes.
Now watch Buck. He actually gets across the line before Bogaerts comes anywhere near home plate.
Boy, is that showing up a pitcher or what? Mm.
Quickly, did you see this last night, Mass?
I did.
So Bogaerts hits a home run off this Gausman or whatever. And before he gets home, before he rounds third, basically.
Right. Basically, as he was getting to third base, Showalter crossed the third baseline.
So Showalter started to walk out to yank the pitcher before Bogaerts finished his trot, and he actually, Showalter did, crossed the third baseline before Bogaerts got around third and home. So he almost ran into Bogaerts, if you will, making his home run trot. How'd you feel about that?
He's disgusted is what he is. He's disgusted with his own pitcher. That's why he did it.
So, you know, do you think he was showing somebody up?
Yes. Yeah, he was going after Gausman. That's what it was.
And he should have been. This Gausman, for those of you who watched the game, this was a joke. This was Cleveland Cavaliers' level of quitting. Red Sox stole five bases on him, and when you watch the steals, guys are going and standing up.
Oh, yeah, they took off while he was still, before he even got into his delivery.
Guys were going without throws. I mean, it was embarrassing. It was a joke. Bogaerts stole in the first, I think, standing up. Bogaerts in his steal in the first inning, he almost paused when he ran that he couldn't believe that he was getting so little attention or that Gausman was never looking at him that he sort of like had a hitch in his giddy up from first to second, and he still went in standing.
They took two in the same inning where Gausman, by the time he realized the guy was going and threw to first, the guy was already at second.
So this was a joke. And so I think, yes, I don't think Buck Showalter was showing up Bogaerts for a slow trot. I think he was so disgusted.
Oh, no, he was going after his pitcher.
He was so disgusted with Gausman that he couldn't even stand to look at the guy rounding the bases anymore. Like, get out of the game. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, look, it's rare. But Showalter's been around forever. I mean, we're going back how many years now when he managed the Diamondbacks, for crying out loud. And then, you know, the Yankees before that. The whole thing. I mean, you're talking a guy who's managed now 20-plus years in the big leagues. He knew exactly what he was doing.
It's tremendous.
And he said, if you're not going to try, I'm going to come get you before the guy gets around the bases. Oh, he was pissed. Totally. And that guy was, you know, and then he fell behind Bogarts. He had first base open, I think, on the home run, right? And he just piped him 1-3-1 and let him jack it into the freaking Charles River, for crying out loud. I mean, it was a joke. That guy, you know, that team is a mess. They are a mess. Really, what are they, 13-30 or something like that? I mean, they're horrendous.
Okay, so back to your phones. You're on a gender-free Friday. Just wanted to mention that. Cam and Taunton, what's your thought of the day?
Something that I don't think is getting enough attention this week is what the year-end press conference that Neely did with the Jacobs the other day. By the way, I find it hysterical that they put Neely with those two because they know those two don't know a damn thing, so they just put someone there they can actually ask questions. Wasn't Neely with Cirelli and Julian back in the day when he first started as president?
It's a good point. Yeah, so Sweeney did a press conference the week before that with Neely's that. Not at, but Neely does go with the Jacobs. That is interesting.
Right, those Jacobs don't know Rick Nash from Riley Nash from Steve Nash. Anyway,
from Rick James, right, exactly.
Neely then says that his priority this offseason is maintaining the backup goalie situation. Not getting a second-line center, not getting a second-pair D-man, maintaining the backup goalie situation. I might be reading too much into this. Was that a shot at Rask, or was that something he really feels? What do you guys think?
Well, I don't think that should be their top priority, but I don't think I would do anything at forward. Other than if I'm trading Krejci. Like, that, what would I do at forward? I would try and trade David Krejci and David Backes. That's what I would do at forward. And then if that money goes out the door, then okay. But I'm not doing anything at forward in terms of adding if I'm not deleting Krejci or Backes. So I don't blame him for saying that. The left shot D, so he doesn't believe that. Like, I don't know what Cam said. I didn't hear the quote. But if he believes that re-signing Anton Hudobin's more important than a left shot D, then he's smoking dope. I don't think he believes that. I think the organization knows what they need on the left side. They know. Well, but whether it's Hudobin or someone else, the backup goalie thing's important.
Well, because Rask can only play a set number of games.
And he's going to have stretches where he goes to la-la land, and if you don't have someone to push him, as we saw last year, if you don't have a coach and a backup who's willing to push him, then you're sunk. Then you got to ride it with him, and that's, you know, back with the old coach, and when you had no backup, that meant you missed the playoffs 2 years in a row. So you better have a backup, and you better make sure Cassidy stays on him.
They went through this once with Hudobin before, right? I mean, you know, and they lost. He went to Carolina, became a starter.
Apparently, Hudobin signed a two-year deal and got a little heavy, from what I understood. He got, so I don't know if he signed the two-year deal here in the first year back here. He wasn't so good, or that was, I'm just not sure. But someone had told me that he wasn't in shape a couple of years ago. This year he was, last year of his contract. So you got to keep the incentive there for Hudobin. One-year deals, whatever it takes. I don't know, and if it's not him, fine. I mean, it's not like Anton Hudo. If I don't think Tuukka Rask is irreplaceable and he's not, then the backup certainly isn't irreplaceable. Just find someone behind Rask who can play and push him. So I do think that is important. Here is Howard in Amesbury. Hi, Howard.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Hey, Maz, I don't know if you saw this, but when the Bruins were playing, I remember you were talking about McAvoy and that, you know, he didn't look that good. In fact, he's probably getting worse. And I saw in the paper the other day that he's playing in the World Championship. So I'm wondering, you know, what is he doing? Is he getting better or not? And the other point I wanted to make about the Celtics is I think Larry.
Cap, your phone cut out.
So we lost him. Look, McAvoy was better at the end of the playoffs than he was at the beginning of them. So it looked like he'd get healthier. But I didn't love the idea of him being in the World Championships. I just, you know, you get a guy at that age who's played that many games for the first time in his career. He's a defenseman on top of it. He had a knee injury. So I tweeted something out about this, you know, a couple of weeks ago when I saw that he was going. And I thought, I don't love that. Like, if I were the Bruins, I'd discourage him from
that. Absolutely. You got an injury.
Yeah. So, you know, shut it down, heal up, stay home. Now, look, you know, they'll probably go off without a hitch and what have you. But to me, I don't love the idea that he went and played.
Dave's in Wellesley. Hi, Dave.
Tony and Big Jim, very disappointed in your opening take. The pollen levels were astronomically high yesterday. David Price is a warrior, and he battled through those conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Notwithstanding that, the LeBron and Stevens argument you guys have been going back and forth a couple weeks. I may be on an island now, it seems, is the way the conversation's been going. I would take an above-average player for the best NBA coach. I throw NBA coaches into the upper echelon of the most useless thing in professional sports, along with NFL running backs, second-round NBA draft picks, and NBA coaches. I don't care who's holding a clipboard. Throw Billy Lanny out there holding a clipboard, and you have the talent on the court. It doesn't matter. So the conversation, LeBron over Stevens, obviously I take an average player over Stevens. It doesn't matter.
Okay, Dave, strong take. I formally agreed with you 100%. Now, look, I'd say that's for most coaches. I think Stevens might be a little different. You might have gotten the rare guy that makes a difference. Now, am I taking him over LeBron James or a superstar player? Hell to the no. No way. I'm not that stupid. But Stevens makes a difference. Sorry, he just does.
So look, he's a good coach. But again, as I said to you the other day, the Cavs drew up a good play after a timeout too.
Oh, it's not his ATOs, Maz. It's just the half of it. I mean,
the culture is the big part.
Well, yeah, but I think he's a big part of that, as is
Sure
age.
He is. Sure he is.
But, you know, his greatest gift is making these middling, bridgey players look like stars. Like, I mean, all the guys that you traded off have done nothing. And there's going to be a whole nother wave of them, too. You watch. Someone's going to overvalue Terry Rozier because of the way he's been made to look here, thanks to Stevens. And he's going to go somewhere and be just a guy. He's going to be just a guy. And maybe that applies to Marcus Morris. Maybe that applies to these other guys, too. But, like, that's his greatest gift, allowing Danny to pump and dump.
It's undeniable at this point. Evan Turner getting $17 million a year from Portland. Kelly Olynyk. And I think it's happening now with Rozier. It's why I hope that they sell high this offseason. Maybe see if he can get back into the lottery. Trade him and that Sacramento pick and see if he can fool Orlando and get to number six.
Wouldn't cost that much.
I mean, the Evan Turner deal might be the biggest one of all. I mean, that guy is as mediocre gets.
Okay, it's a Gender-Free Friday brought to you by Planet Fitness. The world judges they don't. PlanetFitness.com. Everything's on the table, except now Maz has opened the door to Hall of Fame callers.
Didn't open any of it.
Hall of Fame callers from Maine.
No, there was a guy who called that brought it up on his own. I didn't bring it up.
This is Gender-Free Friday.
This is kept, but we have our limits. And Hall of Fame callers from Maine is pushing my limits.
Oh,
but
boy,
go
is it ever.
Go ahead, Kevin. Kevin!
Goodbye.
See, in Maine,
perfect.
You put those two together. I want to talk about the baseball Hall of Fame, and I'm from Maine. Could it possibly be? Well, what are the odds that that's a decent call?
There's no chance.
Zero.
I'd say the odds that is a decent call are better than if someone were from Connecticut calling about the Hall of Fame.
I blame the screener.
I'll take the Maine guy over the Connecticut guy any day of the week because at least the Maine guy has an identity.
We continue with your calls as long as they're not from Maine or on the Baseball Hall of Fame right after Murray's update. Don't go anywhere.
Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz.
Wow.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I think he get a little too much praise. They giving him all the love like he done won 3 or 4 championships. Come on now. Win something first. All the love he getting. Now, granted, don't get me wrong. He's a solid coach. I give him that.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
the love that he's getting from the media, you think he don't want a championship or two? They don't give Steve Kerr that much love. Come on.
Robert Parrish, of all people. We just play the sound, because it's a good cut. Jimmy Murray put some nice music behind it. But in terms of...
Do you know what the song is? It's appropriate.
Yeah, it's I thought that was Son of a Preacher Man?
Yeah, that's the sample from that, but this is Cypress Hill, Hits from the Bong.
Oh, no, so how would I know that? Uh-huh. But it does make sense for Robert Parrish. Yes.
I thought it was Son of a Preacher Man.
Well, that's what the...
Yeah, the sample.
No, I know that. That's as far as I go on
that,
too.
Yeah, me too. I don't know the... Whatever.
It's from a bong.
Robert Parrish on coaches. NBC Sports Boston runs this. I was on one of the show. One of the things they do, I don't mean to be dismissive of it, but it drives me crazy because it's like an 80s Celtics sort of take your pants off green teamer kind of documentary, which makes me want to retch because they show all the stuff against the Bucks in the 80s. So that's why I have that tone. But it's really well done and all that. I'm not ragging on the show. So anyway, Robert Parrish is quoted in this thing, this documentary, about how upset he was, because I guess during one of the years where the Celtics were playing the Bucks, there was commentary about how the Bucks owned the coaching matchup. Don Nelson over Casey Jones. And Robert Parrish got all pissed off. Like, that offended me, and that offended us. And, it, you know, that helped the Celtics beat the Bucks because they got offended because people said Casey Jones was a better coach than Don Nelson. And in this documentary on NBC Sports Boston, it's like, yeah, they said he was a better coach. Yeah, take that. And I just, like, there's times that I walk in that building and I feel like looking around that building and saying, are you people serious? Don Nelson was 10 times the coach of Casey Jones. Casey Jones didn't coach. Casey Jones picked up the basketballs after practice and put them back on the rack. And so, but Robert Parrish had the key quote, like, you know, he says a better coach than KC. That offended me. But do you have a brain? Casey Jones picked up the basketballs after practice and put them back on the rack. And before practice, he collected the warm-up gear and threw it to the side of the court. And that was his contribution to those championships.
So you know the two famous stories, right? One is that they needed a bucket at the end of a game, and he started drawing up a play. And Bird, hold on. Bird reached over with his hand and wiped off the board and said, just give me the ball and get out of the way. Okay, so that's number one. And the other one I heard the other day, which I had never heard before, Shaughnessy told it on the Midday Show with Beadle and Zoe. And that was that Casey Jones would tell him about their defensive matchups. You know, and he would say, like, okay, Ainge, you're on Andrew Toney. And they would go, yeah, okay. And they get on the floor, and Ainge and DJ would look at each other, and DJ would go, I got Andrew Toney. Like, just completely, I mean, ignore him.
Do respect.
Instead, we're going to cover what we want to cover.
I'm sure he seemed like a real gentleman and a good guy, and I don't mean to rag on Casey Jones as a person. Seemed like a very good guy. I've met him a few times. Like
that's how most people describe him, gentleman.
Yeah, gentleman, a true gentleman. But as an NBA coach, would you please, like, just inject some realism into your green teaming? Just try. I mean, Don Nelson, not that he was a champion, but he went on and coached two or three different teams. He won 1,000 games or whatever it is. He's probably going to, I don't know, is Don Nelson going to be in the Hall of Fame for coaching? He might, with the way that Hall of Fame goes. I mean, I don't know, but he was a legit NBA coach who won 1 billion games for 1 billion different teams. Casey Jones. It was a coat rack. So I don't know if Robert Parrish, I know he's not qualified to tell me who can coach and who can't coach. He's right about, you know, it'd be nice if Stevens won something to get all this adulation. I sort of agree with that. But you should also reach the point that says, well, it really does feel just like a matter of time, doesn't it? Like, I mean, with that team and that coach, it does just feel like a matter. If at this point they don't win multiple championships, something went really wrong, don't you feel?
It feels that way. Look, they built something here. There's no two ways about it. But again, to me, the keys to the whole thing are Brown and Tatum. I mean, this year, who saw that coming? Like, go back and think of what Jaylen Brown was at the end of last year and think of what he is now. And Tatum, I'm sorry, for a kid to come out of college like that, score basically 14 points a game during the regular season, and then because they need him to, turns into a 20-point scorer in the postseason? In the postseason! Like, when the game is real. Off the charts, it's just they hit the jackpot with both of those guys.
We continue with your phones. Ray and Woburn, go ahead, Ray.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I was just calling earlier. He called about the Cavaliers and how, you know, the Celtics haven't been good on the road. But three of those four losses came in the first round of Milwaukee. And I feel like the second round, they did well on the road. They won one out of two games and did what they had to do. So I feel like it doesn't really affect this series with the Cavs, especially the way they're playing.
So home road's not a factor, Ray.
Yeah, I don't feel like it's going to be a factor as much in this series. I feel like... The Bucks are young and hungry. I feel like the Cavs, they just don't have enough. I feel like LeBron, he might steal game three or four. I feel like the Celtics will come out maybe a little flat.
But again, home road is not a factor.
No, I don't believe it's
going to
be.
Okay, you green teamers are cute. It's really a cute group. You think Casey Jones is a better coach than Don Nelson, or that he could coach at all. And now home road does not matter.
Well, wait a minute. Maz has kind of said the same thing, though, with this series. You know, the Celtics, they have yet to lose at home during this playoff, so it looks like the Cavs can't win here, so it might not matter.
No, but Maz is saying it's all important. It's the only thing that matters is what he's saying. You've got it backwards. He's saying because of the home court, Cleveland doesn't have enough to win here. It's all about home court. Good God. Look, I think you can win this series. You can go there and win. I don't know what these games are going to be. You have a chance to go there and win. Of course you do. But Vegas gives you about, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 points on the line, depending on where you are. Now home court doesn't matter to the Celtics?
Oh, no, it matters. It matters in this series, too. And I was just looking it up.
The Cavs, I think the Cavs are +7. I'm sorry, -7 in this game.
6.5, yeah.
6.5. Here in Boston, they were pick 'em games. Or the Cavs were 1, or the Celtics were 1. It's 6-7 points difference home road. Please wake up.
Oh, it's huge. No, it's huge. And I was just looking up to see what they've done in the postseason. They got smoked by Indiana in that first game. They haven't lost at home since. So they're 4-1 at home. You're 1-4 on the road. Like, to me, Celtics, but before I'm convinced this series is over, they need to, you know, I need to see them win a road game in Cleveland.
Joe in Hanover.
Otherwise, it's going 7.
Hi, Joe.
All right, guys. I was listening to the show yesterday, and you guys were talking about all the moves Danny Ainge made. The one that stands out is Isaiah Thomas. What would happen if Isaiah Thomas came back? He's a free agent this year. Get him on a pretty cheap deal.
Ah,
I'd show up to boo. I know that.
He's not. Love it. It's not realistic, Joe.
I don't want him. I don't. I look at it and say, first of all, you're not going to be able to appease him. Forget it.
He thinks he's a superstar.
He thinks he's the original Isaiah Thomas. He thinks he's Nate Archibald. He's not going to accept a backup role.
No, he's not a fit here anymore. Irving's going to play, they'll call it 35 minutes a night to make it easy. So you just need someone else.
And I want Marcus Smart as your backup point guard.
Yeah, and if you want, you know, if you want a situation where you can have Smart on the floor with someone else, then you want someone who's a little bit more offensive minded. But you shouldn't even need Rozier to do that. You know, you might be able to get away with Shane Larkin as your third point guard, for crying out loud, during the regular season, and then the playoffs, he doesn't sniff the floor at all.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
You get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
The national media doesn't get it. They don't understand the Celtics, and they truly, really underestimate the Celtics. Like, all the way through. It blows me away. They don't get it.
Oh, he has finally seen the light.
Celtics have a great defense, guys, you can't exploit.
He has climbed aboard the sea's train. He used to be a douche who didn't believe.
Credit to Coach Stevens.
Now he's in love with this team that's overachieved. Felger's a green teamer. Coach Stevens is the best of all time.
They just keep winning in convincing fashion. You see it from the opening tip. Opening tip, he's taking over. It's only Coach Stevens. There's only one coach in the NBA. Coach Stevens is baiting LeBron and just taking that outside shot, and that's how you keep him out there.
Credit to Coach Stevens.
Gender Free Friday continues. Everything from the week. Murray putting together some production, playing around with audio and whatnot.
It's all audio I've culled from the show.
Yeah. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
We continue with Anthony and Bridgewater on the Celts. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, what's going on, boys? Happy Friday. Before I get to my point, Murray, beautiful voice. Well done on the green team at Jam. I love it. You got to look back. Hello?
Yeah, no, you're on.
Yeah, all aboard, Anthony.
You got to look back at this trade. For Kyrie Irving, I don't think without Horford it happens. I don't think Isaiah Thomas is. I get like the main point of that, the trade was the pick. They wanted to pick on in the future. But Isaiah Thomas sweetened that deal. And I don't think he plays as well as he did without Al Horford there helping him get. His points jumped almost 10 points once they acquired Al Horford the following season.
You bet.
I think he's just an important pivotal piece to this team, not only the past, the present, and these championships in the future. Because whatever trade they make, if they make a trade, I got to believe Al Horford's a part of it, and they're going to need that contract on the table.
Okay, that too. All good points. I think Horford's a huge transitional figure for you in this rebuild.
Yeah.
In the same breath, I'll tell you, I think he's overrated and not a max player. I don't say that with any malice, but I think you had to pay him that because that's what the market would bear at the time. And I think you were in a position where you weren't a destination, and you had to start get guys here and prove that guys would want to come here. And not just any guy, but a guy like that professional and that, you know, just so
smart,
tune and smart and everything that you do, like, he's going to prove to be a very important figure in this whole thing.
Yeah, and look, the way he's playing now, it's like almost impossible to dispute, right?
And I don't know if you'll ever, he might not be here for the championships. He might not be.
No, I don't think that's wrong to say that.
But a huge transitional piece.
He just, like, to me, in a lot of ways, he represents kind of what they are right now. You know, smart, disciplined. He, Tell me how many times you can remember him making a bad decision.
Oh, almost never.
Almost never. Like that, and that's how I think of him. So he's not flashy. The numbers don't add up. There's no question he's not a $30 million player or 27 or whatever it is. It doesn't matter. He's not. Fact. But he almost never makes a bad decision. Like, they're almost impossible to remember.
Ah, Carlton in Norwell wants to join us on an agenda-free Friday. Hi, Carlton.
Hey, Catboy. How you feeling these days with Gronk with his girlfriend in Jamaica and Brady with his family in Brazil basically telling Bill Belichick that he can take his Patriot way and shove it right up his backside ever since Bill cost the two of them a Super Bowl by allowing a grudge against Malcolm Butler to, allow Nick
Carlton
to go up and down the field.
Carlton, stop. Let's let Jim answer the question, because actually I am curious.
I feel pretty good about it. They're right to be mad.
As a Patriot toady, how do you feel about these guys skipping important offseason work?
Good. They're right to be mad. They're right to be mad, and Brady should have his new extension. So they should hold out.
Do you worry about how it's going to affect the team this year?
No, they'll be fine. They're still in the AFC East. They're going to roll out of bed and at worst be 11-5. At worst.
You don't worry about it affecting them? Because I do think this is going to affect them around the margins. Meaning, right, they're still going to be 12-4. They'll still be at home in the divisional game. They're still, like, if you look at it from 10,000 feet, they'll look like it's the same thing. But I think it's going to make it awful harder for them to go all the way and do all the right things all the way through.
Well, I don't have that expectation in the first place because they didn't really do much to improve that defense, and they're still going to be unable to get off the field on third down, to me. So they're not going
to
win the Super
Bowl. They better get off to a good start.
Brady's not going to be as good. So what does that mean?
He goes, roll tape, Jimmy.
Well, I mean, but what does that mean? He goes from being a 97 on a scale of 1 to 100 to a 93? I mean, that's what I'm talking about. But it's around the margins. It's around the margins. He's not putting in the same work. So how can you be the same player if you're not putting in the same work at 41? That's hard.
Well, he's got all the answers to the tests.
He'll be damn good. I'm not saying he's going to suck. But how do you get better when you put in less work at 41 than you did at 40? I just think that's a hard pull. Carlton, you may continue.
Hey, Catboy, Gronk and Brady have decided to adopt the Odell Beckham Jr. / Johnny Manziel strategy for football dedication. You better stock up on antidepressants because you're going to be popping them like Skittles this fall when this whole thing disintegrates before your very eyes. And then you have flashbacks back to when you were a little kid and they completely sucked because that's what's going to happen this fall.
Carlton, Odell Beckham Jr. was putting up 350 pounds today and he already said he's going to be showing up to OTAs. So you're going to have to find a different take or a different player.
A different example, but yeah. Your guys aren't showing up to OTAs.
Yeah.
So you'll need antidepressants. Well, like a snake. It's good to hear from you.
They're not going to suck, Carlton. They're going to be really good, and they're going to be home for playoff games and all of that. But if Brady is not putting in the same work, and he's just not, I mean, this is a fact. He's not putting in the same work. I'm not telling you he's not working. Like, I know you're very easy to bend these comments to say, like, Felger says they're going to suck and Brady's not doing anything. No. He's working, and he's working hard, and they're going to be good. I'm telling you, he's not working as hard. He's not putting in the same amount of time that he has in the past. And I think that's going to make it awfully hard for them to be as good as they've been. So that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and if there's miscommunications with some of these new guys, whether it's Jordan Matthews or Sony Michel or, you know, Miami Welker that they drafted in the seventh round that everyone's all horny for.
It's just,
you know,
buy-in. I just think, Murray, yes, they're going to miss on some communication right now.
So when that kind of stuff happens, yeah, I mean, you'll have all the ammo you need to say, oh, see, it's catching up with him right now. He should have been there for early the practices and he should have showed up earlier and blah, 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 blah.
I want to know how they handle adversity. They've been so good at brushing off these early season losses because they're all on the same page. They're all tugging in the same direction. It's all, you know, it's all of that. If they get, you know, if they have their, you know, traditional, they lose one or two early on. If that happens again this year, are they all tugging in the same direction? It's all good. They all showing up early and putting in the extra work.
See, that's what I wonder. I told you in the early part of the year, they better not get off to a bad start. Because to me, that will lead to the second guessing. And, you know, you'll get more of, oh, yeah, well, you know, we said Butler in the Super Bowl, because there's already enough there in terms of friction for there to be a problem.
I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt, though, because I'm still so mad about Super Bowl 52, and it, to me, it proved, and I said this, you know, the following Monday, it proved to me who was more important of the two. If Brady held out this year, I'm good with it. I'm good.
So because you just think he's in the right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And if he spitefully wanted to stick it to Bill and hold out all year, fine. I could live with that.
He's not getting his money. Well, I shouldn't say that. He might get his money. But if I'm Kraft, I wouldn't give him his money.
Passing camps are next week. Phase 3 begins next week. The offense meets every day. They go offense, defense in practice. And Brady's going to miss all that? The media is going to be there on Tuesday.
Oh, the media.
Yeah.
Yeah, and good luck talking to Brian Hoyer. That's what you'll have there.
Well, because you know what? And all I mean by that is...
people will see it. It's visible.
We'll have B-roll. We'll have video of the team practicing and Brady not being there. And then players have to talk after, and then I don't know if Bill's going to be available or not, but that becomes a big story because we make it so. But I also think it is significant that he's not there. He's there every year, even the years that he lived in L.A. I think he showed up for these passing camps.
Okay, but again, if Brady's trying to make some sort of point, okay, if he's trying to make some sort of point, then why would he show up all of a sudden when the media is there?
So
wouldn't he make the bigger point by not showing up when the media is there?
So my prediction yesterday, and I'll reiterate for you today, is that I think Brady's going to show up next week.
I don't think he's showing.
I think he will because he's going to cave. He's been pissed at the team in the past. Maybe not as bad as this, but he's had moments where he's been pissed.
He's going to give Belichick the finger.
And then the balls are out, and the offense is working, and the offense is meeting, and the coaches are there, and he shows up because that's what he does. And if he doesn't show up this year, then he is completely unrecognizable to me. So I predict he's going to be there. And if I had to guess, it's there for that day. The media is there on Tuesday. Because if he's not, we make that a poop storm, and that really goes up Bill's mail chute.
So do you think he's sitting there saying, well, if I don't show up, I'm going to be unrecognizable to Felger?
No, I think you could care less about that.
No, I'm joking.
Unrecognizable to yourself, Tom. Who
he's
are you?
He's already become that.
You are unrecognizable to yourself, man.
He's not coming. I'm telling you, I don't think he's coming.
Well, so look, he's told people he's not coming. People who are familiar with the situation, quote-unquote, say he's only going to come back for the mandatory three-day camp, June 5th to 7th, and he's going to miss everything else. And I find it hard to believe. And I'm not dissing that reporting. I'm sure Brady has said that. I'm sure I know he's pissed. And I bet he said that. But I bet when he wakes up Monday morning, he's going to be like, fine, I'm going. I got to go. I'm going to go. It's what he's always done in the past. And he's going to do it this year. And if he doesn't, then again, I find that borderline gross.
Yeah, they've got no leverage on him anymore.
He wants to stick it to the coach, and he wants a new contract.
Yeah,
and until the latter happens, he ain't going to be showing up.
So, I mean, I think he'd do it for the owner. I don't think he's doing it for the coach.
Himself. I'm talking about himself.
Yeah.
His own internal clock, the way he's wired, the way he's built, everything that he's done to get to this point, I mean, his story is about work ethic because he isn't John Elway in terms of raw talent. Like, he's not that guy. He's had to work harder than everybody else. It's a major part of his story.
He's changed, Mike.
And now he's changed to the point where he's just going to flat out blow off important offseason work. He's just going to let Brian Hoyer throw the ball 150 times a day, and this kid, whoever, from wherever, LSU, and even though he's here, even though he's... more than available to show up. He's just not going to show up.
I told you, I don't think he's coming.
Let's see. Let's see.
He'll invite Matthews and the kid from Miami. He'll invite those guys out to his ranch, and he'll throw with them there.
He's going to bring Josh out?
He'll do it on his terms.
He's going to bring the coaches out?
Nope. He knows the offense.
Okay,
he doesn't need them out there.
So then what do we have here? We have like a palace queue, Matthew. We have a palace queue. We have a mutiny.
By the way, I'm not telling you that I think Brady's right to do it this way. I'm just telling you that I think he's dug in his heels.
Here, put him on mic for me. Matthew, come here. Is this the palace queue you've been talking about?
Yes, it's the palace queue I've been warning about. It's a mutiny.
So you're a former Navy guy, right?
Yes, sir.
So you know what this means. This means there's different people on the ship following different orders.
Exactly. And it'll end up being Josh McDaniels at the top. But it's all craft.
It is a, but so
it's a mutiny.
It's a Q. Brady's gonna have his own side practices and his own side camp.
You make it sound like it's something new. He already does it.
No.
He invites the boys out to Montana.
That's a boys' weekend.
Okay, but that's coming. That's what he's gonna do.
He was in the passing camps last year. He showed up for all the things here.
Yeah, Garoppolo was here then.
And then when they had a free weekend, he brought everybody out there and they took their shirts off and broed it out. Now you're telling me he's going to skip this but have his own?
Yep.
Well, this is like when the baseball players on strike, they have their own camp?
Yeah.
This is what we're doing?
Yeah. Camp Homestead or whatever the hell it was. Look, again, I'm not telling you that Brady is right. I'm telling you that at this stage, if he shows up, what's the point? Now all of a sudden everybody's watching on Monday?
Yes, he's going to cave.
So now I have to show?
Yep.
That's pathetic.
He caves.
That's not
pathetic.
Sure it is.
He's a football player.
Well, if you're going to fight the fight, fight the fight.
He's never been willing to fight the fight.
Well, it feels like he's willing to fight the fight now.
Never has been.
It feels like he is now.
Chris Gasper will tell you himself that Brady talks a good game, then when it comes time to fight, he shows up. He was willing to take a game for Deflategate. He didn't want to go to the Supreme Court with that. He'd give me a game and let's get this over with. He's going to cave. He's going to show next week.
Yeah, he had to show last year because Garoppolo was here.
Here's an update from Murray. 90 seconds, no commercials, and we're back.
Oh, boy, would you look at that. Batten down the hatches, everyone. Grab your umbrellas. It's a Patriot storm. Run for the hills. It's a Patriot storm.